NDR Info. Nachtclub.
Bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde ist Chelsea Wolfe und Chelsea kommt gleich zu Wort. Aber erstmal Musik von ihrem aktuellen Album Abyss. Hier ist jetzt Iron Moon. So, das war Iron Moon von Chelsea Wolfe von ihrem aktuellen Album Abyss. Und sie ist jetzt bei mir im Studio. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thanks for coming down, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
After a long, tiring drive from Brussels. But you had a bit of time to recuperate. You slept here last night.
Yeah, I slept for like 11 hours, so...
Oh, right.
I'm good today, yeah.
Because you were so apprehensive about doing this interview, you needed 11 hours sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right, well, it's not the first time you've been in Hamburg, but it's possibly the first time you're coming as a headliner, is that right? Because I think you were supporting Russian Circles last time around.
Yeah, we supported Russian Circles. We actually did play at that bunker across the way.
Oh, right, okay.
One time.
Well, I missed out on that then. Okay.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, though.
Right, that was the first steps.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And of course, you're quite a well-established artist now, because we're talking in terms like the fifth album, aren't we?
Fifth album, yeah.
Right, and so can you actually pinpoint a time when you actually felt you'd really found your feet as an artist? Is that possible to say that? Or has it just been so gradual, you're not really aware of it?
I think it's more been gradual, yeah. Honestly, it's been such a long, slow burn to get where we are, you know? Like, I really tend to take my time with writing and sort of figuring out my ideas and things like that. So I've been doing this for about 10 years and this is my fifth album. So yeah, I think this is probably the first album where I felt it was very fully formed and, you know, I was able to really express the things that I wanted. So maybe this album, yeah.
Also dieses Album Abyss ist jetzt das fünfte Album und sie hat natürlich schon das Gefühl, dass sie inzwischen ein bisschen etabliert ist und sie meinte, sie macht es schon seit 10 Jahren. Ein ganzes Jahrzehnt ist natürlich eine lange Zeit und wenn sie zurückblickt, dann denkt sie schon, dass es eigentlich ziemlich einfach war und sehr schlicht, was sie am Anfang gemacht hat und nicht so richtig ausgereift. Und jetzt würde sie schon sagen, dass dieses Album ist eine Art so Wendepunkt oder einfach einen bestimmten Punkt hat sie erreicht, wo sie wirklich sagen kann, dass sie tatsächlich da ist, wo sie wirklich sein möchte. Und sie hat wirklich von ausgereift gesprochen. It's interesting, really, because this album, in a sense, is almost like, to my mind, almost backtracking, because the last album, Pain is Beauty, seemed to be quite accessible, really. And in some ways, I think this is less accessible.
Really?
And paradoxically, I actually think it's possibly the most enjoyable album, but it's quite heavy and it's quite abrasive at times.
Yeah.
And I got the impression that Pain, I'm not saying Pain and Beauty was your commercial sellout, but,
yeah.
But it just seemed a bit more palatable for people mm-hmm. not into more extreme music.
Yeah, maybe.
Whereas this album is not palatable for people not into extreme music, or less so, don't you think?
Maybe. I mean, really, I was keeping the live show in mind for the first time when I was writing Abyss, and I think that's why it ended up so heavy, because we had been touring for so many years, and Pain is Beauty was sort of our experimentation with electronic music and things like that. And then for this album, I really wanted it to be guitar heavy and I wanted to play a lot of guitar on stage. And so I think that's why I ended up so heavy, yeah.
Right, okay. So this is your rock and roll album then? Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, my second album was pretty rock and roll as well. I kind of go back and forth, you know.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Sie meint, dass dieses neue Album ist tatsächlich relativ heavy. Es ist schon sehr rigoros und dynamisch. Und das ist der Fall, weil sie an die Live-Show gedacht haben, als sie es komponiert hat. Sie wollte unbedingt, dass die Songs sehr geeignet sind für ein Live-Erlebnis. Und Pain is Beauty, das Album davor, war etwas sanfter und es war letztendlich ein Experiment mit elektronischen Instrumentierung. Das war ein elektronischer Ausflug mehr oder weniger und nicht so geeignet für Live-Shows. Und sie wollte unbedingt viel Gitarre spielen, in diesem Fall auf der Bühne. Und das hat sie im Hinterkopf immer gehabt, als diese Songs entstanden sind. So the songs were actually meant to be a cohesive group of songs, which you deliberately wrote to create a particular mood. There's nothing arbitrary in there. Did you actually sit down and say, well, this is going to be the album I'm going to make and it's going to have this particular tone to it?
I did, but there's definitely some arbitrary moments as well, yeah. I mean, there's always a little bit of backtracking in the sense that I'll grab a song or two from, you know, 2 years ago or 5 years ago. Like the song Crazy Love is a song that I wrote maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but for some reason the mood of it seemed to fit with the newer songs that I was writing.
Okay.
So most of it is deliberate, but there's some random ones in there as well.
Okay. Ja, es war schon beabsichtigt, eine bestimmte Stimmung zu schaffen mit diesem Album und Songs extra dafür zu schreiben, die dazu passen. Aber es gibt schon ältere Songs dabei, zum Beispiel Crazy Love ist ein Lied auf dem Album, das 5 oder 6 Jahre alt ist. Und sie meinte, das hat einfach gepasst. Und deshalb hat sie es auch also mit an Bord genommen. Und sie meinte, aber es ist schon im Grunde genommen das Konzept gedacht, aber es gab eben etwas so willkürliche Ausnahmen, wo man einfach ältere Songs mit reinbezogen hat, die dann ganz gut gepasst haben. Do you actually think in terms of how easy or difficult your music is to consume for other people? And is that something as an artist which you're aware of? Or is it just you're so just basically involved with your own artistic experience that you can't even begin to think or even to consider what people might think of what you do?
I don't usually consider the listener until I'm in sort of like the mixing phase of things, you know. So while I'm writing and while I'm recording, I'm really just, you know, feeling it out and wondering if I like listening to it. And if I like listening to it, I usually feel like it's a good indication that the people that like my music will enjoy it, or at least parts of it, you know. And then once we get into the mixing phase, after all the recording and we're kind of putting all the pieces together, then I'll consider, like, maybe that is a little too harsh or a little too quiet or something like that, and then I'll add more dynamic.
Right,
or whatever, okay. The song needs, yeah.
So in the later stages of the proceedings.
Yeah, but still, even then, it's like, you know, even if something seems a little abrasive, if I like it and I like listening to it, then I'll go with it.
Right, okay. Ja, Chelsea meint, dass sie sich eigentlich keine Gedanken um das Publikum macht, wenn die Songs tatsächlich entstehen, wenn sie die komponiert. Sie macht sich keine Gedanken, ob sie gut ankommen würden oder nicht, oder ob sie vielleicht zu sperrig sind oder zu schwierig. Höchstens, wenn sie die nachher abmischt, also am Ende der Produktion, dann macht sie sich dann schon Gedanken darüber, also wie sie rüberkommen, wie das Feeling ist, also ob es vielleicht zu hart ist oder ob es zu sanft ist. Und aber dennoch, wenn sie das Gefühl hat, dass sie sich gehört, dass extremere Klänge mit dabei sind, dann steht sie dazu. Sie würde nie Zugeständnisse machen, falls irgendjemand da draußen also das nicht mögen würde. With this production, this guy who produced Swans, John Congleton, he produced the album, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And I think it's an interesting kind of, it almost seems a bit of a kind of ambivalence there to my mind in the terms of the feel of it. Because on the one hand, it seems kind of really warm and hazy almost at times. And on the other hand, it sounds quite tough. I'm not saying it's cold, but it's kind of like, it's almost, I'm not even saying it's contradicting itself, but it's like different kind of moods in there all mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I first met him, I could tell that there would be some sort of tension between us, you know, like our approaches to music were maybe really different. But at the same time, I you know, I loved his work from people with Swan, you know, bands like Swans or bands like Bill Callahan or something. So I knew that he could handle the dynamic range that I would be bringing to him. So once we were in the studio, it was sort of like that. Like my approach is a bit more like washy and hazy and warm, and his is sort of cold and, you know, a little more harsh, I guess, or something. So I think that us coming together ended up being a really good balance for the album.
So you were warm and he was harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Right, okay. Yeah. And you talk about tension. I mean, tension can be a positive thing, and obviously it turned out to be a positive thing. Mm-hmm. But was the negative tension there as well, what had to be overcome?
Yeah, I think there always is. I mean, my band and I are very self-produced. You know, I have a co-producer in my band, Ben Chisholm, and we really demo every song out to the point of it being almost complete, you know. And then so once we get into the studio, you have to sort of battle with the producer's ideas. And that's kind of why I wanted to bring in outside influences, so there would be a sort of battle and that would kind of reflect in the music, you know.
All right, okay. So a battle of wits.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Battle of sounds, yeah.
Okay. Ja, sie hat John Congleton als Produzent engagiert, der unter anderem Künstler wie Swans produziert hat, und Bill Callahan hat sie auch gesagt. Und sie wusste, dass es vielleicht eine gewisse Anspannung geben könnte, weil er für eine bestimmte Methode hat oft irgendwie so ziemlich so kälte Klänge, die er gerne produziert und vermittelt. Und sie ist eigentlich eher so warm und in ihrer Attitüde, in ihrer Herangehensweise ein bisschen verschwommen vielleicht. Und sie ahnte schon, es könnte ein bisschen Konflikte geben, aber sie hoffte im positiven Sinne. Und sie wusste, dass er so erfahren ist, dass er in der Lage wäre, aerodynamische Bandbreite auch irgendwie im Griff zu kriegen. Und sie ist schon sehr eigenwillig, und überhaupt sie und ihre Begleitband ist sehr eigenwillig, weil sie produzieren ihre Demos selbst. Und die Songs sind eigentlich schon fast richtig, eigentlich komplett und eigentlich fertig, bevor sie überhaupt ins Studio gehen. Und deshalb sind sie schon sehr wählerisch und sind sehr pingelig eigentlich. Und sie wussten, es könnte tatsächlich Stress geben, aber es ist alles gut gelaufen. Und sie mag es ganz gerne, dass es diese Ambivalenz gibt, also vom Feeling her. Do you think there's a song on the album which reflects that most effectively of all? Is it fair to say there could be a track?
Let me see.
Give you the album to have a look at.
Maybe Color of Blood.
Color of Blood?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Color of Blood hören wir jetzt. Das ist die Wahl von Chelsea, weil sie meint eben, dass dieses Stück am besten die Zusammenarbeit zwischen ihr und John Congleton repräsentiert, also wo es auch besonders gelungen ist, also diese Mischung aus Härte und Sanftmütigkeit sozusagen. Hier ist The Color of Blood von Chelsea Wolfe von dem Album Abyss. So das war Color of Blood von Chelsea Wolfe von dem neuen Album, aktuellen Album Abyss, und sie ist jetzt bei mir in Studio. Of course, people are obviously going to regard you as being a serious artist, and you're probably sick to death of people saying you're a dark artist. But it's all relative, of course, and in terms of pop music, that's what it is. You know, you're serious and you're dark. And is that something you just take on board, or is it something you in some way try to fight against, or are you just happy to be that because that's the way you are, because you're this inward-looking emotional artist who tends to dwell on serious matters? I mean, which is perfectly legitimate, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yeah, I think I've really come to accept that. You know, I think the word dark encompasses a lot of different things, and that's totally okay with me. And I do focus on reality, and I take stories from world news and from, you know, people in my own life, and I put them into songs. So often they are quite dark. You know, that's some people's reality. I think what bothers me more is when the genre tags like goth or things are attached to it, because in my mind I'm not really goth. I didn't grow up listening to goth music or anything like that, so that's maybe a little more annoying. But when people call me a dark artist or a serious artist, it makes sense to me, so it's okay.
Right, okay. And of course the name of the album, Abyss, mm-hmm. is asking for trouble in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wanted to go deep with this album, and it's a lot about, you know, inspired by my own experiences with dreams and nightmares and sleep paralysis and things that are very internal. And at the same time, I was sort of considering the whole universe as this dark, endless, confusing abyss. So I wanted to contrast the two, you know, the macro and the micro of the abyss.
Right, okay. And because I read about the sleep paralysis that you've suffered from, that's something which you had essentially in your childhood more than anything, wasn't it, or growing up? Or is it something which is still accompanies you now?
Actually, when I was younger, I had different sort of recurring nightmares and insomnia. But as I got older, I developed sleep paralysis, which is more like you wake up and the people from your dreams are still in the room with you, so it's a little disorienting, and kind of the anxiety of it started creeping into my music.
Right. And at what point did it start creeping into your music then? I mean,
honestly, I think it just has for a long time. I never really just confronted it until this album. Yeah.
Oh, this is the first time you've actually confronted it head on in artistic terms?
I think so, yeah.
So you just almost tried to ignore it beforehand and just write about other things, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just sort of more subconscious in the past, and for this album, I did want to confront it head on, yeah.
And has it helped in any way, do you think?
What helped more than anything was I was living in Los Angeles for a long time, and when I started writing this album, I decided to move out into the mountains and just get a place that's really quiet and set up a studio there and started writing the album. And honestly, that actually ended up helping my sleep problems a lot as well, just having, you know, the peace out there, not having so much noise and helicopters and people and cars, and like in Los Angeles, you know, it ended up helping my sleep problems a lot, yeah.
Right. And of course, you just slept 11 hours. So yeah. That's obviously things are getting better.
Yeah, maybe. It's the first time since we've been here, though, yeah.
All right. No, but I don't mean to be flippant about it, but I mean, isn't it an additional stress factor going on world tours, for example, with mm-hmm. insomnia problems? I mean, it must be, because you got to be fresh as a daisy, haven't you, everywhere, you know, wherever you go. You can't be completely wrecked when you get on stage.
It is hard because, yeah, I mean, the way I sing, it's like it takes a lot of energy out of me, so I really have to take care of myself, and I don't deal with jet lag very well. So, like, until last night, I'd really only slept, like, 2 or 3 hours a night.
Right.
So it was a little difficult on the first couple of shows.
But. And what about winding down after gigs? I mean, you can't go straight to bed, can you? Go straight to sleep after a gig, surely?
No, I mean, there's still a lot of work every night, but I try not to, like, party too much after the shows or anything like that. You know, like I said, I kind of have to take care of myself these days and protect my voice. Yeah.
Because there's so many artists who've told me, they just kind of let on to me almost as a bit of a secret, feeling really guilty about it. A lot of them, when they're on tour, they just drink themselves to sleep. And they hope they're going to survive it, you know, for as long as the tour goes on. And then they stop drinking when they get home again. And then, yeah, but everybody has their own way of getting through the stress.
I think I used to do that when I was a little younger, but I can't do that anymore.
Right, okay. Ja, sie hat, Chelsea, den Ruf natürlich schon, eine sogenannte düstere Persönlichkeit zu haben, düstere Künstlerin zu sein. Und ich habe sie gefragt, ob es sie das nervt, weil sie dann so abgestempelt worden ist. Und sie meinte, nein, sie steht dazu, dass es natürlich der ernste Thematik ist, mit der sie sich beschäftigt. Also sie hat schon eine gewisse Aversion gegen den Begriff Gothic, verständlicherweise, weil sie sich selbst überhaupt nicht so wahrnimmt. Und sie hat nicht solche Musik gehört, als sie aufgewachsen ist. Aber es ist durchaus dunkle, düstere Musik, die sehr ernst ist und ihre Musik beschäftigt sich zum Beispiel mit ihren Träumen und auch dieses aktuelle Album viel mit ihrer sogenannten Schlafparalyse. Das ist irgendwie so eine Art Krankheit oder medizinischer Zustand, in dem man eigentlich wach ist, aber man kann sich nicht bewegen. Und man glaubt, dass Menschen im Zimmer sind, die in Wirklichkeit gar nicht da sind. Also fast ein bisschen paranoider Zustand. Und das ist natürlich nicht sehr angenehm, sowas zu erleben. Und dann hat sie lange Zeit gehabt. Also als Kind war sie einfach eher schlaflos. Und dann hat sie diese Schlafparalyse sich dann später dazu entwickelt. Und dieses Album ist ein Zeichen eigentlich für sie, dass es ihr eigentlich besser ist. Das erste Mal, dass sie sich wirklich ganz offen damit auseinandergesetzt hat. Und zufälligerweise hat sie keine Lust mehr gehabt, in Los Angeles zu leben oder nicht im Zentrum. Und sie hat ein Haus im Gebirge dann gemietet. Und da ist sie sehr ruhig und da hat sie sehr ländlich. Und seitdem sie da wohnt, klappt es besser mit dem Schlaf. Und dort ist dieses Album entstanden, beziehungsweise da sind die Songs komponiert worden. Und sie sagt, es ist teilweise schon sehr stressig, auf Tour zu gehen, weil sie weiß, dass sie nicht so besonders robust ist. Sie leidet schon unter der Zeitverschiebung, unter Jetlag. Und jetzt hat sie gerade 11 Stunden geschlafen, aber das ist das erste Mal seit Ewigkeiten. Sonst waren die ersten Termine in Europa nur 2 bis 3 Stunden. Right, so what we're going to hear next? Next choice, please. A song about sleep paralysis.
After the Fall.
After the Fall. Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe we'll talk about that song as well afterwards because it's quite interesting musically, isn't it, as well, I think. I'm not saying that the other song's not interesting, but this is particularly interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So After the Fall hören wir jetzt von dem Album Abyss von Chelsea Wolfe. So das war After the Fall von Chelsea Wolfe von ihrem aktuellen Album Abyss. Und Abyss heißt Abgrund übrigens. Und das ist natürlich auch bezeichnend, also dass sie schreibt gerne darüber, wie Menschen sind, die sich am Abgrund befinden oder kurz davor. So that particular song, I think, it's interesting. It's almost like a throwback to the last album because there's quite effective use of electronics on it, which maybe more could have even fitted on the last album, couldn't it?
Yeah,
you think?
For sure.
Or was it an outtake from the last album then?
No, it wasn't. It was a newer one. I think that was just maybe the most literal, you know, sort of translation and ode to the sleep paralysis and sleep issues,
right.
Lyrically, you know what I mean? And that sort of up and down and like feeling trapped inside of a dream.
Okay. Ja, das Stück, das wir gerade gehört haben, das Lied verkörpert am besten das, was sie gesagt hat über diese Schlafparalyse, unter der sie gelitten hat. Und das hat sie versucht, also ganz konkret dann in Worten umzusetzen. Und sie glaubt, dass es ihr auch ganz gut gelungen ist. Do you think that as the years go by, that it's actually difficult to keep pushing the music forward, or is it something which is quite effortless for you so far? Is it so far so good in that respect, do you think?
Yeah, so far so good in that respect, yeah. But I also have such an amazing group of musicians that I work with that are constantly pushing me forward as well. The group of musicians that came together for this album was really unique and I think helped shape the sound of it, obviously. And I feel like even if I'm getting sort of stagnant or something like that, I'm lucky to have a lot of people in my life that sort of inspire me and help me form ideas, yeah.
So does it seem like a proper band?
It is, but mainly it's my main collaborator, like I mentioned earlier, my co-producer, Ben Chisholm, and we sort of go back and forth and write songs together, and then we'll bring other musicians in. One of my favorites is Ezra Buchla, who's a viola player, amongst other things, and the way he plays viola is really sort of, I don't know, I really connect with it on a deep level. And when he comes in and adds parts of the songs, they really start to take on a shape that that makes sense to me. And like on Iron Moon, for example, on the very end of it, he added this scream. He was screaming into his viola and adding a bunch of sort of feedbacky, scratchy viola parts. And that added such a deep emotion to the song. So people like him are really important for me as well.
Is it difficult? Ezra, you said he's called the viola player.
Ezra Buchla, yeah.
Buchla, yeah. Okay. If you have like a musician like that with quite a lot of flair in his personality as well, then you can become, do you think, maybe too dependent on him, because then if you're kind of writing new songs and you kind of have him in mind, and then what do you do if he does a runner? I mean, you don't know whether he's going to stay there forever, do you, in your band, surely?
Yeah,
and do you think about those things, how you become dependent on other people? Or can you be independent of other musicians, do you think? Would you just have to stay flexible in that respect?
Yeah, I like the flexibility of it. I mean, honestly, I do consider making an album completely by myself again someday, like I did when I was younger. And I like the sort of back and forth with band members. You know, like Ezra did one tour with us, and on this tour I have different people with me. So I really like to change things up, and I don't feel like I have to rely on any certain person. I just, you know, feel lucky to be able to do that, yeah.
Right. Also, Sie erwähnt, dass Sie eine sehr talentierte Band hat, und Sie freut sich sehr, mit diesen talentierten Menschen zusammenzuarbeiten. Und das finde ich sehr inspirierend, und deshalb hat sie bisher nie eine Schreibblockade gehabt. Die Ideen fließen regelrecht, und sie erwähnt extra der Typ, der Bratsche spielt, Ezra Buchlin, glaube ich, heißt er. Und sie meinte, dass er ist besonders kreativ, und sie erwähnte gerade seinen Beitrag zu dem Lied Iron Moon, das ist besonders beeindruckend. Und sie sagt, dass sie dadurch große Inspiration bekommt. Und ich meinte, ja, ist das nicht schwierig, weil man dann irgendwie auf andere Menschen wirklich angewiesen ist und ist man nicht mehr so selbstständig. Und sie meinte, ja, sie kann selbstständig sein. Früher hat sie auch ganz alleine gearbeitet und sie hat sich auch überlegt, ob sie das irgendwann wieder macht. Aber sie freut sich einfach, mit diesen Menschen zusammenzuarbeiten, und sie hofft natürlich, dass sie einfach möglichst lange dabei bleiben. And looking back in time, I mean, were you less happy working completely on your own than you are now working together with other musicians? Do you actually feel more like an artist reaching its full potential working together with other people? Because you got to, if it becomes a democracy of a sort, it can also be stressful, can't it?
Yeah, it's not really a democracy, though. It's still really my project at heart. It started as a solo project, and I still definitely have final say on everything. And, you know, everyone that is involved with it understands that, and they're cool with it, I guess, you know.
Right, so you are the boss, yeah.
Yeah, so even though there's a lot of different contributors to different songs and different albums, at the end, it's really, you know, me putting the different sounds together and making sure that it all fits right. So
it is a rule by tyranny at the end of the day.
Yeah, a bit. Okay. It sounds so negative, but it's not a negative thing.
Okay.
It's good.
Ja, sie sagt, dass es eigentlich nicht besonders demokratisch ist. Also sie hat zwar diese tolle Musiker um sich, aber letztendlich ist sie die Chefin. Sie entscheidet dann schon. Also was wirklich gemacht wird, es ist letztendlich ihre Entscheidung. Und das respektieren die anderen, das verstehen sie, dass es letztendlich ihr Projekt ist. Und dabei bleibt es dann eigentlich. And yeah, is there maybe another track we can hear where you actually think that the group as coming together is the most, it's kind of like a celebration of talented people getting together and having a good time?
Let's see. I'd say The Abyss.
The Abyss, because, right, the title track.
Yeah, it started with, I was just playing some ideas on a piano, and a sort of broken piano in Texas at my friend's house, and I sent the tracks to Ben, who then sort of made it into this electronic beat almost. And then once we were in the studio, we added more guitars, and Ezra played a really amazing outro at the end of it, so it's a good highlight of the collaboration of influences and people involved, yeah.
And how you're actually better off not being on your own, right?
Yeah,
that's
maybe
a good example of that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So dann jetzt das Titelstück, The Abyss, und sie meinte, das ist ein effektives Beispiel dafür, also wie ihre Musiker effektiv mit ihr zusammenarbeiten. Und sie meinte, sie hat die Grundidee für das Lied in Texas komponiert, bei einem Freund oder Freundin in Texas. Da gab es ein kaputtes Klavier im Haus und sie hat damit rumgefummelt und rumgespielt. Und sie schickte die Grundidee dann an Ben, der so was Elektronisches draus gebastelt hat. Und Ezra kam dazu und hat irgendwie eine tolle tollen Beitrag dazu geleistet. Und das Endergebnis hören wir jetzt. Und das ist ein Beispiel dafür, wie die Band wirklich sehr gut zusammenarbeitet. Die Abyss von Chelsea Wolfe, von dem Album Abyss. So, bei mir im Studio ist Chelsea Wolfe immer noch. Und das war im Grunde genommen das Titelstück The Abyss von dem Album Abyss, also von der Band. I got the impression in the past, because I know quite a lot of your previous stuff, it wasn't overly autobiographical. It seemed to be quite vague in those terms. It seemed to be quite abstract. And it definitely wasn't a typical confessional songwriter kind of material. And as far as I can gather, what you've told us already today is that maybe there's a shift of emphasis in that respect, but it still doesn't come over as being like 100% autobiographical.
Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, when I was first making music in my very early 20s, I recorded an album that was overly personal. It was almost, you know, just like reading out of a diary or something. And when I listened back to it...
First album, you know?
No, like, I mean...
Which one do you mean?
It's something that I never released.
Oh, you never released it? Sorry, yeah. Okay, I wasn't listening properly. Go on.
So after that, I sort of listened to it and felt a little bit sick about how personal it was. So I made a conscious decision to start writing about things outside of myself. But at the same time, there's always at least a song or a few lines here and there that are very personal. I just choose not to tell people which ones, you know, because I like to sort of keep my own personal life and my musical life separated.
Okay. And what about romance? I mean, most artists, they tend to feel they feel obliged to discuss their romantic life in songs, really. And I get the impression that is not first and foremost your motivation.
Right. I mean, of course, there's influence from my own life. I mean, a song like Crazy Love or a song like We Hit a Wall from my last album, Pain is Beauty, those are very much about love and about the struggles with love and, you know, making things work and finding the right person. So it is definitely personal. I just don't talk about who it's about or something, you know?
Right, okay. And there's just not any kind of overemphasis on it, though? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Ja, sie sagt, dass sie in der Vergangenheit sehr wenig richtig persönliche Songs geschrieben hat, nicht so autobiografisch. Sie hatte nämlich ein Album komponiert, das extrem persönlich war. Und es war ihr so persönlich, es war ihr ganz peinlich und sie hat es nie veröffentlicht. Und danach dann hat sie die Entscheidung getroffen, sowas nie wieder zu machen. Und deshalb hat sie eher über ihre Umwelt geschrieben und nur gelegentlich so persönliche Inhalte gehabt. Und das ist ein bisschen mehr der Fall jetzt bei diesem Album Abyss, dass es persönlicher geworden ist, aber dennoch nicht rein autobiografisch. Und sie ist schon der Meinung, dass sie noch ein sehr privater Mensch ist und sie möchte nicht, dass alle Leute ihr ganzes persönliches Leben mitbekommen. Es gibt schon ein paar Songs wie Crazy Love auf dem Album oder We Have a Wall von dem letzten Album Pain is Beauty. Und die ging schon um ihr romantisches Leben, um ihr Privatleben. Insofern ist es nicht, dass sie völlig verschlossen ist, was das betrifft, aber sie hat einfach keine Lust, ihr Innerstes nach außen zu kennen, dass andere Leute irgendwie genau mitbekommen, also wie es ihr dann seelisch geht. Of course, it was well documented in the early days how shy you were on stage. I mean, people even spoke in terms of stage fright or whatever. I mean, was that exaggerated or was that true? Have you completely overcome that now?
I've overcome it in the way that I want to be a professional, and in the early days there were some times that I would play a few songs and I would just absolutely have to leave the stage because I felt so claustrophobic and like my skin was crawling.
Well, and you sent everybody home then, or what? The audience just went home then, or did you come back again then?
I would come back but I just needed a moment by myself, I guess. But yeah, over the years I've just worked to overcome it, and really I just have to sort of tell myself to get over it every night, and I get up there, and once I'm playing a few songs nowadays, I'm usually fine. The only thing that makes my skin crawl these days is when there's like a technical problem or an amp stops working or something. You know, there's those moments where you have to fix it as fast as you can, and that is always very just like, I want to run, you know. But yeah, I think I really am able to sort of lose myself into the music much more than I was able to when I was younger, yeah.
I guess it's probably a fine line as well, because, I mean, if you manage to stay on the right side of the fine line, then it kind of gives you an extra authentic kind of character to what you do, because people are going to really empathize with that this artist on the stage is actually genuinely vulnerable and not really thick-skinned and flashy, you know what I mean? And I think a lot of people are going to really like that, because that kind of sensitivity will appeal to them.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, nobody has to worry about me having a huge ego or anything like that, because I definitely knock myself down as much, you know, as much as needed, yeah.
As much as needed, yeah. Okay. Sie sagte, dass sie früher sehr viel Lampenfieber hatte. Sie hat sich kaum getraut, überhaupt aufzutreten. Und es war teilweise so extrem, was sie empfunden hat auf der Bühne, dass sie nach ein paar Songs die Bühne verlassen musste. Das ist im Laufe der Jahre besser geworden jetzt. Und normalerweise nach den ersten paar Songs fühlt sie sich allmählich wohl in ihrer Haut. Sie ist einfach älter geworden, ein bisschen reifer geworden, aber dennoch wird sie nie so ein richtig so extrovertierter Popstar sein. Und ich meinte, dass das Publikum das bestimmt gerade schön findet, dass sie so sensibel ist und so verwundbar. Und das trägt im Grunde genommen zu ihrer Authentizität bei. Und sie meinte, ja, also sie ist auf keinen Fall besonders egozentrisch und sie ist eher so ein bescheidener Typ und wirklich nicht großkotzig. Also das könnte man ihr eigentlich nie vorwerfen. And I've noticed on this album even more than in the past, I think I get the impression you're getting more acrobatic with your vocals. You seem to be able to kind of change styles within seconds, like from like singing with kind of like a love song sort of voice and then into blues or whatever, you know. Is that something which just come with the territory of just the experience, or is it, have you actually been really working at that to get more versatile?
A lot of it was just letting go. I mean, sometimes I'll write songs and I don't really feel like I can sing them physically or something, and so I'll just kind of be like, oh, I can't do that. Maybe I'll give that song to someone else or something. But on this album, there were songs that I wrote like that, like maybe even the chorus for Iron Moon was really a stretch for me. But instead of saying like, oh, I'm just not going to do it, or I'm going to sing it in a quieter voice or something, I just tried it. You know, I just made myself do it. And I did have a vocal teacher I went to maybe 3 or 4 times that sort of helped me through that as well, and was just kind of just told me to just try it, you know, and I did. And it was a little scary for me, you know, and I wasn't sure if it sounded good or not. But in the studio, you know, John Congleton, you know, backed it, and the other band members backed it. So I was just like, all right, let's roll with it. Yeah.
It's interesting because you're saying that you haven't got a big ego, and I believe you haven't, I'm sure. You come over as being quite modest and self-effacing. But I do actually think the nature of your voice is that you have one of these voices which actually sounds quite important, which I think is quite good because it kind of sounds quite dramatic. Mm. I don't know whether important is the right word.
I know what you mean, though.
You know what I mean?
It's kind of deliberate these days, yeah.
Yeah. And so it comes over as, it makes it more interesting because there's this self-importance, this aura around the voice. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just finally owning up to the fact that I am a singer and, you know, that's what I do. And when I get on stage, I want to be able to sing strongly and things like that. So I've been working on it, yeah.
Right, okay. Ja, was ihre Stimme betrifft, hat sie schon daran gearbeitet, dass sie eine größere Variationsbreite in ihrer Stimme hat. Das ist mir aufgefallen, dass sie tatsächlich sehr unterschiedlich singt, teilweise, gerade auf diesem Album. Sie hat auch bestätigt, dass sie daran gearbeitet hat. Sie hat auch ein bisschen Gesangsunterricht genommen und sie wollte sich einfach mehr zutrauen. Und es gab so Songs wie Iron Moon, der Refrain zum Beispiel, wo sie meinte, sie fühlte sich überfordert davon. Und hat sie gedacht, okay, die kann es einfach versuchen. Und sie hat im Grunde genommen versucht, ein bisschen mutig zu sein und einfach das Potenzial ihrer Stimme auszuschöpfen. Und sie glaubt, dass es ihr allmählich gelingt, eigentlich dieses Potenzial auszuschöpfen. Und sie meint, dass sie allmählich eingesehen hat, dass sie eine gewisse Präsenz hat in ihrer Stimme, eine gewisse Ausstrahlung, eine ziemlich so wichtige Ausstrahlung in ihrer Stimme. Und es schadet nicht, wenn man tatsächlich das versucht, das effektiv dann zu vermitteln. Und sie denkt, dass es ihr wahrscheinlich besser gelungen ist als jemals zuvor. So, zum Schluss hören wir jetzt das erste Lied vom Album, Carry On Flowers. And we'll have a good time tonight.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Bye.
Okay, see ya. So, wir hören jetzt Carry On Flowers, also das erste Stück vom Album. Chelsea Wolfe, mein Studiogast. Und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville. Ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.